strings have a lot to do with your tone. The NYXLs for me have always tonally been great.
I really need that friction to feel my slides. I depend on that friction even for accuracy.
Gentlemen, what's the quickest way to improve your tone?
Oh, like and subscribe on YouTube.
Obviously, yeah, we'll keep you up to date on all that great gear that's out there. Yeah.
Back to the Rig Rundown.
Hey everyone, this is Chris Keys, Four Premier Guitar. We are on a field trip in Chicago, Illinois with Mike Sullivan of Russian Circles. Mike, how you doing?
I'm great. How you doing, Chris?
Real good. This is like a third time's a charm situation. We tried doing it in Nashville during your tour, Tried doing it in Louisville, I-65 jammed us up. We made it work during our visit to Chicago.
The universe wanted you to see our practice space.
Yeah. So how long have you been in this spot where you and Dave kind of jam?
We've been here for about 20 years. Almost the entirety of the band has been bouncing around a few rooms. Usually the same good roommates, other rock-minded fellas.
Yeah.
And it's home for us. This is kind of headquarters for our band, always has been.
Yeah. So I want to get into the gear, but I think the first spot I want to start is actually your tapping technique. I wondered what that got influenced by, and if it was something that you were doing previous to Russian Circles, or was it something as you guys were developing Russian Circles that you kind of taught, or you learned to apply to like voicings and things in your head that you could only accomplish that way?
Yeah, growing up loving rock music, and obviously Eddie Van Halen was king of that, you know, and that was like super influential, and learned the rudiments of what he was doing. But that wasn't, as I got older, I didn't want to play that type of lead guitar music, but always loved what he was doing.
Yeah.
It wasn't until seeing bands, namely Don Caballero, that blew my mind. Uh-huh. I saw them at the Fireside here in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
It was them and Fucking Champs, another instrumental band. Metal, Fucking Champs was more metal, Don Cab was more experimental.
Mm-hmm.
But Don Caballero, Ian Williams, the guitar player, did a lot of tapping and looping. And I was like, I'll just copy you fully and just try to make a career of it.
Not even trying.
And he's so inventive and creative that I can never come close to what he's doing.
Yeah.
He's gone on to do battles and other cool projects.
Yeah.
But that was the first time I've seen tapping used as a more rhythmic rhythm guitar that works well with drums.
Yeah.
And it can be a cyclical part of the song, not a lead, thing that Eddie was doing. So that kind of like blew the lid off as far as, this can be, songs can be made out of these parts of tapping, and you can tap multiple strings. And if you're not trying to compose a lead out of it, you can be more minimal with it and create a repetitive kind of feel to it where it's going to live on
throughout
the song.
Piece. Even during that intro, you kind of had two different parts, or during the intro part that you played for us there, you had two different parts that kind of overlapped each other that were mm-hmm. slightly different that built to a bigger mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a hallmark of what you do within Russian Circles.
Okay, cool. A lot of that comes from, like, you write a part, anything that's catchy to your ear, and like, okay, let's put it through a filter of what would it sound like to tap that? What would it sound like to finger pick that? What would it sound like to make that a tremolo pick part and or pull up the arpeggios? So that song, Gnosis, was originally not tapping, and while sending it off to my bandmates, like, which version do you like? Oh, here's a tapping version too.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, let's use that same riff, that melody again. So we use the original picked version and also the tapping version. Under tapping, there's limitations / own sonic identity when you do that.
Yeah.
So it sounds different, even though it's the exact same notes, you know? So that's just an example of refining the part through a different lens.
Are you having to do anything with your pedals, and not to get there first, to jump ahead, but because tapping, you can maybe lose some volume. So, or maybe that's part of the layering that you're doing in a live mix as you're playing and building stuff live on stage, is that what you're playing with the pick or chords that you're doing, you want the tapping to be more delicate and not be as like full sounding. Cause I know sometimes if you don't tap in a certain way or adjust EQs, it can be lost in the mix, or it's more of a sparkle or you're trying to do on top, or you know what I mean? Like, I guess if I'm conveying right, is the loss of volume a concern for you?
That's never been an issue. I love clean amps, and usually when I'm tapping, it's often clean also, but if it's a strong, bold sound and not a saggy amp, it will cut through. So it depends. Pickups and bridge will be more percussive, so that's helpful.
Yeah.
So even the intro, I switched to the bridge just because that's beneficial for getting the attack from the tap, you know. But there's no compressor involved. That can be helpful for sure.
Yeah.
But for a one guitar player band, there's room for me to kind of fill the space without getting stepped on by a competing frequency. So I don't pay too much attention to, it's more so volume, self-mixing throughout the song
to
make sure there's room for peaks and valleys, you know. But tapping, I'm aware of what pick I'm using, but it's not too tricky to make it sound okay.
And one thing you mentioned before we start rolling is that you guys have never lived in the same city, right? Mm-hmm. How does that equate to like the evolution of you guys being creative, the three yourselves? Because when you think of being in a band, you think of, not that you guys don't do it, you don't get in a room and jam together.
Sure.
I'm sure you do still, obviously. Yeah. But as you create new ideas, is that kind of become the strength of the band in terms of being able to create alone and then come together and make a greater sum of the parts?
Yeah, it's evolved over years. The first time Dave and I got together to play, we wrote our first song ever called Carpe, and there was no riff at all prior to that. We're like, we're buds, just getting together.
Yeah.
Get together and jam. And that was almost like proof of concept. Like, oh, this is what works. Some looping, minor key, I can stay in my lane and repeat things. Dave's a great drummer. Watch him manipulate the beat and evolve the song on his own. And then when time comes, I can change and catch up. And it all changed again once Brian joins the band, because he has a sonic identity of his own.
Yeah.
So that was cool. That definitely shifted the band a little bit in a cool way. But as far as writing, it became, the first time was just jamming. And after the first record, I was like, all right, let's have composed pieces and have riffs we can at least start forming together into arrangements.
Mm-hmm.
So when Brian joined the band, he lived in Seattle and is back in that area now. He never lived in Chicago with Dave and I, and that was okay.
Yeah.
Because even when Dave and I, when I lived in Chicago with Dave, like, we wouldn't jam every week. It's like, let's let the riff archive build. And when the library is full, let's go pick out a few books and check out, you know, get some options. We're not just kind of like thumbs up our asses, like,
forcing it.
How's this? It's not cool. I got nothing, man. So there's always something. We come to practice, like, jamming with Dave. There's something to work on.
Yeah.
Exciting. Like, oh, does this work? Like, that's a crazy idea. I never thought of that. Part might work with that or might not. And it's cool. And that's where you get multiple brains in the project.
Yeah.
And Brian gets involved in lending his two cents to the songs, and the songs grow at that point.
Yeah. And it's probably just an evolution through that. But also, you guys probably, I'm sure, use, you know, sharing stuff through Dropbox or WeTransfer and stuff.
Yeah, and the pandemic forced our hand because we had a full European tour lined up in March of 2020, and we had to cancel that right when things were getting gnarly.
Yeah.
And like, well, let's do a record.
Yeah.
Enthusiastically, let's get to work, you know? So I kind of forced our hands as far as being comfortable recording a drum set at home,
yeah,
doing bass at home, doing keyboards, doing guitar at home. And it was fun. It was fun as hell because that led to all kinds of breakthroughs. I mean, thankfully, no gnarliness occurred as far as health for any of us or our loved ones. But it gave us professionally time to really get into the weeds of recording.
Now, speaking of recording, the last, what is it, two or three records you did with Kurt Ballou?
Yeah, yeah.
And so what's that experience like, working with Kurt? Him being almost like now three in a row, he's like a fourth member in a way.
Kurt's so valuable to us as a band and recording with him. We're recording again in March with him.
Okay, cool.
And we can't wait. The idea came up, like, should we try somebody different as an engineer or producer? And like, we live in the heavy world. We like to be a heavy band.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, Kurt is so good at that, excels. And he has so many good ideas too as a guitar player. He'll help me refine riffs even, where he's like, hey, what if this little tweak happened? I'm like, that's a great idea. Thank you, Kurt.
Yeah.
And some records still have more or less suggestions, but the last few records especially, like, Kurt's been a big part of just, we'll send him demos, he'll get acquainted with them. And I love Kurt as a person, as like, I knew him as a fan of Converge,
yeah.
And then working with him, like, I really value him. I think anybody who likes doing heavy music, and he can do more than heavy music, but
of course,
he's known for doing heavy music.
Yeah.
So, but I can't wait to record with him and know that he's going to help turn me on to new pedals, crack my mind open a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of a sponge for what he offers. Every recording cycle is an opportunity for growth and learning.
Yeah.
And he's always a wealth of knowledge when it comes to
and
that.
And expanding the rig, I'm sure, like you said, with his gear knowledge.
Yeah, it's like I can only afford so many pedals out with me. Which of Kurt's suggestions do I choose to take with me?
Yeah.
But he's great. Kurt's awesome.
Now, getting into the gear, obviously there's some big changes that we can see behind you compared to when we last spoke, which I want to say is 2017 at the Ryman, when you were opening for Mastodon and Eagles of Death Metal. But you kind of had some tragedy, and through that tragedy, you guys have like kind of revamped your rig through help of friends. Can you explain what happened there? Was it 3 years ago now?
Around there, yeah. Okay. We were on tour and we stayed in like the most meth heads forward town in the world, not knowing. And all our gear was stolen, everything besides my pedal board essentially was just ripped out of our trailer. And it was a shock, you know.
I bet.
But there wasn't much time for complaining at all because...
Because mid-tour, right?
Mid-tour, the community reached out tenfold to help us out. Where they're like, we did a GoFundMe to help us out. You know, some gear was insured, but not. You lose so much when that happens. You know, you don't ever expect to lose everything, and so that was a shock. But the outpouring of support and love, it was incredible. Not just monetarily speaking, but friends and people and bands you didn't expect were coming to help.
Yeah,
and so we were in the Bay Area kind of when that happened, south of the Bay in California. And Chelsea Wolf lived in that neighborhood. So they lent, like, hey, you can take any cabs or heads you need and the guitar you want. So Chelsea Wolf had a Dunnable Narwhal guitar.
Kind of like this one.
Yeah, very similar, very similar, same body style. And I wasn't in a position to be choosy about guitars. So I was like, hey, it has six strings and the tuning pegs work great, you know. So that I used that Dunnable, and then she had some oranges and some other cabs that we were able to throw together and got through the tour. And while playing a Dunnable, I was like, wow, I've played Sasha's guitars before, but something about the ergonomics of the body shape and the feel of it kind of blew me away. I was like, oh, this show is kind of a shit show because of like nothing's working right, and it was just a mess of a tour in general.
Yeah.
I was like, well, this guitar's something. And we had to break from that tour because one of the members of the headliner had COVID. So we had to close down shop and open the tour up in 6 months later or whatever. Mm-hmm. And at that point, Hiwa had reached out to me because Dave Ketching from Eagles of Death Metal, he's a good bud of our band and good human in general. Unbeknownst to me, he reached out to Hiwa and said, hey, my friends in Russian Circles are in trouble. Maybe you can help them out. So when we were on the the canceled tour, before we knew it was actually canceled, we were renting High Watt stuff for free. High Watt's like, hey, take, here's a spot, grab their gear. Mm-hmm. And that was the marriage of like that Dunnable guitar via Chelsea and the High Watts with my thankfully still existing pedal board.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Like, these High Watts take pedals so well as a pedal platform.
And it's kind of always been your MO with amps.
Yeah, exactly. And I was shedding pedals right and left with that first time plugging in. It's like, oh, no, less sweeteners to the tone. Like, the tube compression from these amps is so unique to themselves that I don't want to color that or discolor it.
Yeah.
Because it's so pleasant, you know, for what I'm looking for in a clean tone. And it took distortion pedals and fuzz pedals like a champ. And so between the Dunnable guitar and the High Watt, I was like, this was not even a bad situation. No one got hurt. Nothing catastrophic happened.
Yeah.
Our health is intact. No one got hit upside the head. The gear's gone. I did okay. You know, poor Carrie from Deaf Heaven. I was borrowing his cabs.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, your cabs are gone. He's like, dude, who gives a shit? Like, so I didn't take a huge hit. But I got introduced to High Watt, which has been a game changer for me. And they've been awesome ever since that first introduction. And Sasha from Sasha Dunnable equally has been incredibly generous, cool person. So it's fun to get to know the people behind the badges on the headstock or the amp and know that they are good people and they care about your genre of music. You're not getting lost in the shuffle. They know what you're up to and what your band is about.
Yeah, it'd be a very, you know, uplifting situation coming out of something very, you know, shitty, like you said, probably shocking, depressed. But then to see that love and compassion from friends and family and strangers.
Sure. I mean, I'd be like lying if I said it was a bad occurrence. Like, there's an old saying, you never know what's good or bad for you at the time.
Yeah.
You know, so that what was seemingly bad for a moment was a godsend in the end. You know, like, worse things have happened to us as a band than that. You know, that was the most public, and it was on paper not a great thing, but I am grateful for it. Not to be, you know, overly cheesy about it, but like, a lot of great things came out of it for me personally as a musician.
Well, right on. Can we dig a little deeper on this narwhal? You could tell me about any like specifics with maybe pickups that are in there so people know about that.
Yeah, this is like just a narwhal that the style he came up with, you know, based on Mosrite, that Sasha came up with. Usually his guitar is a 25.5 scale, like a Fender. This is more of a Gibson scale. And similarly, the Gibson bill that's got a, I like Gibson guitars, like Les Paul Customs.
Les Paul Customs.
So this has a mahogany neck, mahogany body, a maple top, and it has different controls, whereas this has a tone and a volume, but also a coil tap, which is useful. And I've always been a fan of lower output pickups. So this is both are DiMarzios. This is the DiMarzio PAF 36th anniversary.
Okay.
Which is great. Love it. And this is the Joe DePlantier signature, the Fortitude. And it's great for just low end, meaty, chuggy riffs. The clarity.
And that's lower output, that one is?
Because yeah, it's
I think Gojira, I think.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't think low output.
They sound heavy as hell, but the pickup that he attached himself to is like maybe 8.5K output, you know?
Right on.
And I've always been a fan of that. For stacking loops, if everything's too compressed and too loud, it gets gnarly and tougher to make a clear loop.
Yeah.
And these are very forgiving with gain and stacking loops. So these really work for what I do. And I trust his ear and his research he's put into these pickups.
Yeah.
And like auditioning other pickups, I found these to be my favorites so far I've used. I'm also a fan of Lawler Imperials.
Oh yeah.
I've used a lot of those. Those are similar at a lower output, but the high gain versions are on the lower end, but great. So
yeah.
I like lower output pickups in general.
Gotcha.
Even the old, like the 80s Gibson, what was his name? Tim Shaw. Tim Shaw.
Yeah.
The Tim Shaws are all my Les Paul Customs. Those
Shaw
always,
Buckers, yeah.
Yeah. And like those old pickups sounded great. So that's kind of what I found most comfortable with. And these DiMarzios are great as doing the PAF stuff too.
Right on. What should we know about strings and tunings?
Tunings are kind of all over the place depending on the song and record. Strings, I use D'Addario 11 to 56. But on this guitar, I swap out the low E for a 58. Guitar tuning, it all started off with Dadgad, and then I drop the high D and low D to C sharp, and then I other strings start creeping lower, and then desperate to make tapping patterns, other strings go up and down. So at lowest, this will hit a low A during the set. And with a 58, it's sloppy. It's kind of floppy, you know, but it works. I can still keep it kind of intonated. So ideally, with one set, I can go from C sharp down to A with this 58, and it holds. And it gets a little touchy. You got to be careful with intonation the higher you go.
Yeah.
But Sasha and I kind of worked with the bridge and different string gauges to find a compromise of what can I use during a set to not change guitars a million times.
Yeah.
So the strings will come and go. Like every song is almost a different tuning, but it's not remarkable in any way. It's just a matter of making the extremes work on one guitar.
Are you creating tunings? Not saying you're inventing them, but are you stumbling into tunings, or are you kind of going into them, you know, whether it's just changing the peg, a turn or half turn?
Sheer desperation. Where it's like with tapping, you get to do different things with different shapes. So dadgad is great for certain tapping forms, but if you drop a certain string upwards, I've gone up and down different strings. Sometimes I'll tune up, and we can get to that with a pitch shifting pedal.
I see that.
But it's fun. It's experimentation, maybe not desperation.
Yeah.
But I'm sure every guitar player worth their salt has like changed one string and seen what a world that opens.
Yeah.
You know, I never would hit that note before, but that note has more tension to it. Huh. I should pay attention to that or find a way to implement that. So it's just a way of finding notes that you typically wouldn't find, you know.
When you guys go to write and record an album, are you trying to lock into one tuning, or you let each song be its own thing?
Each song is its own thing. Oh. I even declared ignorantly this new record, like, it's going to be in this tuning. I'm already like defecting from that. And it's like, never mind that. But like, it's certain, you can be too low. Like sometimes a low A can have an impact, but it can also lose the tightness and the immediacy of like a thrash riff. It might get lost. And if it's more broad scope music, a low A can really fill it out, you know. And there's a myriad of variables with scale length and tone.
Yeah.
They're trying to cover it all with one guitar and one pedal board without manipulating every variable. You find each song has a place that it sounds best in. So we kind of let the song, even now while writing, like, this sounds better up higher. This other one sounds better lower. So it's a song by song basis.
Got it.
For sure.
Now, I know the Les Paul Customs were kind of your starting point, or what I've associated with most with the band. And then you went to the Orcas, the Huber Orcas.
Oh yeah, those are great. Yeah.
And then I think that was a shift just for the weight, because you have like,
A number of issues, but that being part of it, yeah.
And then how do these sit on you? Are the Dunnables light?
They're not light, and that's not to say his guitars are
customs?
Heavy. They're not as heavy,
okay.
But they got some weight to them, you know. But I had all kinds of, a myriad of health issues from a car accident that messed my neck up, and I've become stronger and more willing to shoulder this, literally.
Where
it's like, this is nothing. It feels... I could do a Les Paul Custom right now and be fine.
Okay.
So I think I'm just healthier in general.
Well, good.
And maybe that was all leading to the Dunnables, and the Huber guitars are amazing too.
Yeah.
And so much of the Les Paul thing, I love the Customs, but with a Les Paul, the toggle switch is up here. And when you're a dude like me who's tapping away, that's right in the way. So either I had to be a jazz dude or whatever, or Dave Matthews and like riffing out up here, which I was not stoked about. And too low, like, which is comfortable.
Like you're in corner, yeah.
I'd be knocking shit out of the way. So this shape is just, it works for me.
Yeah.
You know, so I love Gibson and the lore and the tradition of Gibson, but I'm happier with these, to be honest. Yeah, that's a bit different.
So tell me about what's going on here.
So that's similar to like his, that's a 25 and a half scale, okay. And it has a maple neck. So this.
Yeah.
It's tuned lower and has like a thicker low 62 for the low E string, respectively, and it sounds great. Some of the songs are hard to play on this because I'm so used to playing in a smaller scale of Gibson, but this sounds killer. A lot of the new stuff is being written on this. The maple neck has a component, I feel like. When you're turning up loud, all the Tonewood drama and all that shit,
yeah.
Turn up loud and you hear everything. all of that matters. Tone is cumulative. Our friend Dave Johnson, who's from
Scale Model Guitars.
Yeah, Scale Model, shout out. He taught me early on that that tone is cumulative, and it is. So like to discount the make of the woods, even under heaps of distortion and all kinds of crap we're putting these things through, there's a small percentage difference. And I find the scale length and the make of the neck and all that doesn't matter. But so this one I typically use for either drop A, or right now I'm experimenting with other tunings, but cool guitar, and they do sound different.
Same DiMarzios or no?
Same DiMarzios. Okay. Yeah, huge fan of those.
Cool, I'll put this one back. But have you ever messed around with like a baritone six? Like a six string?
I've not. Like my bandmate Brian just got one from Sasha, and I'm like dying to check that out.
Yeah.
Of course. I can't wait. But as a guitar player, I'm aware of like needing to get around the neck, you know, and I have decent sized hands. But as far as like the bigger scale, you start to feel it after a little bit.
Yeah.
When you comfortably do big stretches on a smaller guitar, then you can reach up. It's like, I need to like get a fucking thing here. Like I need to like change the way I dress now in order to accommodate this. So, what comes first is the sound, you know?
Yeah. So. I heard from, this is a question out of nowhere, yesterday from our time at CME with David. He said that you write and kind of come up with a lot of your ideas in a nylon string guitar. Is this true?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of classical music.
So that's kind of what you play guitar, like outside the context of the band when you're playing guitar just for Mike.
Yeah. And it's, you can extract the melody from that. Like,
really?
A good song should be able to be played on any instrument, I feel like.
Yeah.
And I'm in a big dumb rock band where you simplify, we're playing rock music, so you simplify it. And so you extract this classical piece and you kind of make it work in an environment for your bandmates where it's, you know, all right, this will be the bass line. Not that right, the bass lines, but like here's the melody and it will do well with this bass progression or chord progression beneath it. That's been the last like 10 years or so, it's kind of been like that.
What do you enjoy about classical music in terms of like it being completely dumb from, you know, your big dumb rock band?
Yeah, it's so, the guitar is a polyphonic instrument, so you can elicit so much emotion or convey so much emotion with chord shapes, and you can slow, when you're unaccompanied, you can slow down
or
speed up, and you can get louder and quieter, and you can convey so much emotion with one instrument. And it, to me, that is pleasant to listen to and to play to. I don't like the fancy technical aspect of it. That's one thing you could do with it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't appeal to me. What appeals to me is the expression of a beautiful idea and a feeling. And I think one of the instruments that's good for that is classical guitar.
Do you have a favorite classical guitarist or composer that you can think of?
I'm basic in that. Like Francisco Tárrega
is
like a genius as far as what he's done with the guitar, you know? And like David Russell is a modern guitarist who I could watch him just do interviews all day long. He's such a down-to-earth, humble being that's almost more influential in his playing, which is already world-class.
Yeah.
John Williams obviously is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
That's what kind of got me into the classical world. And there's a traditional Irish band called Lunasa that I've always been a fan of. I'm a fan of traditional Irish music. And they had a song called Autumn Child, which is kind of a classically almost like folk piece, but it's a finger-picked classical essentially style, and that just certain things hit you don't question why, but he's kind of pulling that thread and see where it takes you. But certain, there's a level of expression that happens with less guitars, that when it's just one guitar and no effects and no funny business, it's very,
you got a lot of funny business down here.
I'm hiding, shielding myself from funny business. Yeah, in my cave of effects.
Did the Celtic music get you into like Dagged, and that's how it got incorporated into Russian circles?
Okay. Like repetition, droning, and Dagged all came from Celtic music.
Huh.
Whereas like this is a part, it's okay to repeat it and lay into it. Always have a drone going almost all the time, and that like a pedal tone, and you can lean on that, and you can pull and push against it, and that came from the Celtic.
How was Russian circles received in Ireland or Scotland?
Good. Like, I've dragged us to like small towns like Galway, which is one of my favorites. And Ireland's special to me. My bandmates humor me by going there, you know. But it's great. Ireland's a great country to visit in general for anybody.
Yeah.
But the crowds are awesome, and it's a lot of fun.
Cool.
Going there.
Well, let's get a little deeper on these high watts before we get to the funny business. Do you know what we got for tubes? And then what do you have, like Celestians in here or Fanes?
Those are, they're a modern concoction that high watt worked on called the Octopulse speaker.
Okay.
Which are made, their Fane has made them, but they're geared towards higher gain type music.
Okay.
So they work well. They're broken in now. They sound great. They're not your conventional like purple backs or other Fane.
Mm-hmm.
Those sound great too. Every Fane I've used for heavy music, anything I've done loud sounds great. So,
okay.
So the school of thought with high watts works. The Fanes and the clean headrooms of the amps just sound incredible to me.
Okay. And how are you EQing them? Because I know last time with the Fenders, you kind of had a couple different amps and they were all EQ'd to make a big sandwich.
Sure. Since the pandemic, I had time to kind of unpack my whole rig, and with shit being stolen, like, all right, you're building it from the ground up. What do you want to do? And in that time off, I discovered the gift of the stereo spectrum.
Yeah.
And as a one guitar player band, I can utilize that stereo spectrum. So I'm playing everything in stereo. So I have one head and one cab that's generated all right or all left.
Okay.
And those are EQ'd exactly the same, just to have a stereo image that's perfect,
mm-hmm.
you know. Then one of these heads powers that 212, which during a live set would live on Brian's side, on the other side of the stage.
Okay.
And that's EQ'd almost nightly to make sure it fits in that room and serves a purpose to help out the front of house mix. But that can be dialed in differently than, and it always is different, a little bit different than the...
Who's EQing that? Is that you or Front of House or Brian? Because it sounds like Brian's the one that's listening.
Yeah,
to
he has
the
to
most...
deal with that. I was checking with him, like, is this any good over there? Does this sound like music? Is that killing you? And Brian's usually pretty, like, amiable and satisfied. But yeah. I'm like, hey, you can hit me with like, it's too bright, too rough. But I lean on our sound guy, Patrick, a lot
okay.
to make sure it's usable for him. Because ultimately, the mono signal... is for front of house, for like an intense chug part or different elements of a set, he'll want to lean on that center channel, which would be the mono in this case. And this also has a DI signal coming from it, which is very useful for front of house.
Okay.
So the mono is DI'd also.
Hey everybody, I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. So, as many of you know, D'Addario's been a longtime friend of PG, sponsoring Rig Rundowns, and they're a longtime friend of all the players with their Players Circle Rewards. I've been using it for years, and essentially, they will reward you for the gear you buy. Open it up, look inside, and there's a reward number. It's free and easy to sign up for. And as soon as you sign up, you immediately get some reward points just for putting your name in. After a while, you accumulate enough where you can buy more of this fantastic D'Addario gear. So as a Players Circle Rewards member, you get discounts on custom products and merch, you get free shipping, and you get a discount on the gear you're buying with your points or free gear, depending on that. And if you're charitable, you could donate your Players Reward points for musical education. So collect those points, buy the great gear, and let's get back to more rundowns.
Well, right on, Rodney Dangerfield. Step up to the funny business.
And let's dive in.
All right, Mike, tell me about, let's start with maybe any changes since, you know, the last time we spoke, which has been 8 years. But
okay.
Not that you can recall that, but are there any new faces that we should know about on your board?
I imagine there are. I don't recall when and what's changed since.
Okay.
So
this has been like a stable, this has been like a stable crew.
Yeah, and speaking of forcing, like deciding to be playing in stereo, that forced my hand as far as like, I need a stereo looper.
Okay.
I need stereo delays. So that has changed some of the major players.
So didn't you have a boomerang?
I used a Kai Headrush.
That's
before.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Great pedal, but it's not proper true stereo, two wins, two outs.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we'll start with the loopers. This T-Rex image looper is what I use for live looping.
Okay.
And that's one knob, start, stop, erase loop, simple, caveman simple.
Uh-huh.
So anything fancy as far as a looper pedal and in a live moment with a laser light show happening,
yeah.
You just want something simple and effective, and you don't want to wait several seconds to erase a loop.
Yeah.
You don't usually have that. So That works great for my needs.
What's the Jam Man then for?
That is usually
pre-programmed stuff?
Yeah, usually drones to help us out during tuning. Okay. So there's pre-programmed loops or just arrhythmic drones to kind of that will add loops on top of that. That's like a foundational kind of like pre-recorded drone.
When you're building loops and you inevitably, as awesome as you are as a guitar player, mess up, do you in the live setting, do you just let it go and live with the hiccup keep hitting you in the face, or do you start over?
I'm always aware of the interval of how much, if I mess up a loop, like how much time do I have to create a new loop? And that's why I mentioned, like, if you can erase it real quick and like get to it, I'll save the day. There's times where I look back at Dave with just apologetic glance. Like, we're both in for a horrible ride. This is now in,
buckle
like...
Buckle up, Davey.
This is 7.5 and 8 right now, and it definitely should be in 4.4. So I'm very much aware of entry and exit points of, like, oh, I can make this... I can be a hero. Or
yeah,
it's like, I just screwed us. and that happens. And, like, Dave and I are deaf as a result because we hear the guitar so loud.
Yeah.
And, like... Brian's lucky, he gets to play to like the band, you know, like we're both like suffering through my poor looping skills.
Just reminded of your mistakes.
Yeah, and like, oh, this is a 4-minute part. We had to really like hide that this is a bad loop for like a long part.
Or you just intentionally make mistakes on all future loops. So then yeah, it's like almost the intention.
I think next time we record, we should intentionally bake in like poor timing. Just yeah. Oh, that's what they do. They do off-kilter shit.
Yeah.
So, not by design, but yeah, let's give them the thought of that.
AI is like dialed in. Oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah, You're just way over here. We're human. The human element is here. We can't hide that. That's for sure.
Well, talk to me about kind of what you got. It got a trio of Strymans I see here.
Yeah.
You got the Dig, you got the Timeline, and the Flint.
The Strymans stuff's great. A game changer for me was using this Timeline delay pedal, but because you can lock in, you can save 100 plus settings, so I can save the BPM for a song, like say, like Gnosis is set up right now.
Okay.
We live and die by that delay pattern. The whole song, like, is essentially our metronome. So that is just so convenient for me to go from song to song and like, oh, there's the tempo.
So your presets are based on songs rather than sounds almost? I mean, no, I know there's different sounds within that, but...
And sometimes another reason I love this pedal is certain riffs sound cool in stereo delay, and you get to... That lush feeling sounds rewarding. But sometimes you need a mono delay. I look at the Edge. I'm a huge fan of the Edge. Mm-hmm. It's funny to go back and listen to the Joshua Tree and listen to... He made decisions. Like, this is best in mono. This is best in stereo.
Yeah.
And each riff has its own spot, where a sweet spot, whether it be, you know, what type of delay, what tonal characteristic to it in the stereo or mono. But... So it's fun to kind of like program, this is a mono delay, this is stereo, and the Timeline gives you a lot of options.
Can we hear a quick sample of a stereo versus the mono?
Yeah, so we have Gnosis dialed in here, so I'll just play that. This would be stereo. So if I let up on a palm muting, you hear accents.
Yeah.
You know. And a song like Song of Ours called Mota is, that would be mono. It's recorded mono and sounds better mono. Mm-hmm. Even trying to introduce it into a stereo field, it loses something. And like, no, this belongs mono and that's okay. So they have a different feel.
Yeah.
You know? And one, when I'm playing stereo, it opens up the sonic space for my bandmates. There's half as much guitar. So you can feel that in the air. Like, oh, like the bass is consuming this in a good way.
Yeah.
Because there's more, it's not taking up as much literally.
Real estate.
Yeah, exactly. So it feels different. Like when I'm in stereo, it makes it more of a sonic spectrum, a three-dimensional spectrum.
Yeah,
I could say.
If it also gives the listener or the audience member not a chance to take a break, but it gives them a different, if it's always stereo, then that's kind of what you are, and it almost becomes, you lose the effect. But when it goes away and comes back, then you really feel it and hear it.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I noticed you on that mono delay, you kicked on the octave that you alluded to earlier. You have an octave pedal that says octave, and then another look pitch shifting that says pitch, which is obvious.
These are the Digitech drop and ricochet pedals.
Okay.
And some song, like Mota, I play that in different key than we usually would, but out of convenience, I would shift that up two intervals, like one full step, and use the octave, which means I need both pedals, you know. So eight albums deep into the career, you start adding a lot of pedals, you know, just to get the songs, you know, taken care of. So some songs only need one, either the pitch up or down, two steps for me is what I do, or just the octave. But sometimes there's Mota there. Ideally, that'd be both octave and pitch.
So that's the drop. And then the other one with the pitch is for the ricochet? Or am I going to backwards?
We all make good and bad ideas.
Yeah.
I've made many of both, more so the latter. And one record, I was like, we should tune up a little bit. And so I'll shift my guitar up a full step.
Okay.
And so the pitch will be up in an octave, you know. So
can we hear that?
Sure. So,
like what song or
so
what?
Album Dad, Gnosis, the song I was playing earlier, that's an AADGAD. And for some of the songs on a record of ours called Guidance, it was the same tuning but up a full step. So it'd be BBE, God help me, E, A, too high,
yeah.
You know, and so poor Brian, he's used to playing the songs that tuning. So I like desperately make a plea to can we all knock that down a little bit? And it's like, no, we wrote it and that it's staying.
Yeah.
We have other instruments on stage. So here's Gnosis. I'll play this. This is Mota without any affectation.
Okay.
Or besides the delay.
Yeah.
And then let's shift it up. That's down. So that's an example of an up and down. There we go, up, but he's the octave, so it's now being shifted up two intervals with the octave down, full up, which is, I'm sure, great for the sonic blueprint.
Yeah.
And that would probably have a drone beneath it.
Okay. Good. So. Now, with those drones, it makes me think of like a Taurus from Moog. Did Brian ever use those in the band?
He certainly does use a lot of
foot pedal based.
Yeah,
stuff,
he has a Taurus that he uses a lot. And we'll both do our own interludes depending on who has the most tuning changes. The other person's kind of responsible for padding.
Give him a net.
The interstitial parts, you know. So that's just guitar. All the drones in there are just guitar, or occasionally I'll use a Moog for fun, but I think most of the current ones we've used in the recent tour are just guitar-based.
Okay.
Maybe I'll bust out the, there's some fun noisemakers, but I want to get
into that.
But the Slicer, the Boss Slicer.
Yeah,
that's a cool
a good
pedal
one.
For stereo shit. That's so much fun.
Or the Freeze, too, is always
an
easy one.
Yeah. So that stuff's intentionally not fancy, and then we'll get more chaotic. That's just an easy foundation, and then we'll get a little more gnarly with the soundscapes on top of that.
How are you using the Flint? Is that mainly more of a reverb or tremolo gets used to?
It's funny, there's a setting on the Flint that accentuates the highs and lows for whatever reason, and I find that I'm happier with the guitar when I keep that always on, but with the speed all the way down and depth all the way down. So it's an EQ decision at that point where it just a little bit pushes the highs and lows. And I always ask our poor sound guy, this or this, on or off? He's like, the B or whatever, you know,
I'm
fooling him with. And he's like, it sounds better on, stop asking me now. So I just find that setting, I think it's either harmonic or tube, but that accentuates those frequencies. So I always keep it on for that. And then certain songs of ours do use a tremolo. Mm-hmm. And there, believe it or not, there's tremolo there. If there's enough garbage turned on right now, it's hard to tell. But so I'll use it for certain songs for actually tremolo. And then the reverb I'll just usually kind of leave on, usually just a light. There's so much delay happening, I don't need that much reverb overall. Yeah. So I'll use a little bit just to kind of help out, you know.
So up next to that, you have a tube screamer and then I don't another black pedal. Can you talk to me about those two?
It gets funny. So I'll kind of work backwards from the amp. So we do the loopers and we'll do the delay pedals. So the Dig's a great stereo delay and the Flint is in there somewhere. But then we start getting into the gain stages. And there's
what do you do? Sorry to interrupt. Is like, what do you have different about the Dig and then the Timeline? Because both being delay based.
The Dig, like the Mota, or not the Mota, the Timeline pedal, that delay, I leave that as preset settings, right? Okay. I know that's going to be that. When I reach to that, no matter which song I'm on, I know it's that BPM and that delay. Whereas the Dig, I'll use that as like, I'll tap tempo that all day long to make sure it's up. Whatever tempo fluctuates, that's the one I lean on for like, current. If we're drifting from a song, which we do intentionally playing live, I'll use that for like a more immediate, not immediate, but just like a more lively delay.
Yeah.
It's usually shorter.
Organic
and not as identified by song.
You mentioned BPM a couple times. Are you guys playing to a click track or is that kind of that?
No click, but when certain songs that are live and die, like I said, about by the delay, we need to make sure we're all hearing that delay. Mm-hmm. And instead of me just winging it every night, it's more effective to like, this is what the record was.
Yeah.
And that's the gift of the digital world. It's like, this is going to be this delay every night. And it's nice.
Got it. So continuing on from the Dig.
Yeah, so the Dig, we go from there. And then it's all like gain stages for a while, for like the next 10 minutes. until I get like boring again, even more boring. So I guess this little EQ toucher up, this is the amp tweaker depth finder, and that adds presence or resonance, like you would find on a 5150 amp. So that's before my gain, so it just gives me a little more low-end punch, or I can carve out a little more high-end articulation. And then I have this MXR line booster, which is just an overall bump in signal, right, go up or down in volume to go to 11, and then the bulk of the distortion comes from this Friedman BEOD Deluxe. And that has two channels. So I'll have like intense gain and then kind of mellow gain. And then from there, it gets tricky again because I like to use a booster like most people do to, you know, tighten up the low end.
Yeah.
And this splitter box here, this is a effects loop where I can choose three different effects loops. And essentially, I'm choosing three different OD options.
Okay.
There's this Fortin modified Ibanez, which is great for chugs and has a good low end growl to it.
Okay.
And then, so that's one of the options. That'd be blue. And then on this side, red would be this pedal, which is a Electric Eye Canville Unicorn.
What's with all the black tape?
And that's an HM2 style pedal, which
is, I know that was big deal that with the newest record was on that
Kurt
record.
Is all about like he loves manipulating HM2 options, you know, and he's great at that, and Metal Zone too for the last few records. But this one is a great pedal. It's just I taped over it because it's such a bright white enclosure and had pretty graphics and all that.
Yeah.
But I just want it to be like NASA Mission Control, simple, old school, like I don't want any distractions.
Just when you guys have like a dark stage,
it gets crazy up there, you know. So I just wanted a simple, like on-off. Ideally, everything's just monochromatic for me. But I don't take away from his pedals. Electric Eye makes a lot of good pedals. They do. I'm spacing on some of their other pedals.
Okay.
But as far as HM2 manipulation, that gives you a lot of cool options.
So that's blue.
That would be blue on this, and then if this is a gauge, this other red, that means it's these two pedals together. We're trying an effects loop.
And what are those?
And this is a Maxon 808, which is a really great, warm-sounding TS-808.
Yeah.
And that sounds a little more articulate.
And you get the drive all the way down on that.
Yeah, because I'll use it similar to the Fortin modified 808, but this has less hair, and it's more of a scalpel precision, less round. And I'll also use that as my clean tone. So anything clean is just that Maxon 808.
Okay.
without any coloration. It just it helps give a little more presence and life to it. And then in that same loop, I'll use, I'm sure this is like making no sense at this point. I mean, and I understand that.
That's what's great about guitar players. It's like, you know what I mean? You can, your way is your way.
So in the loop, usually with the, this other, I can either use this Maxon 808 or not. This Octron, which was introduced to me by Kurt Ballou, is an octave fuzz pedal. So you can do an octave lower and an octave higher.
Oh, cool.
And the octave higher has a fuzz circuit built into it. So that's great for just thickening things out. Mm-hmm. If I want a little more depth and hair, it can get muddy quickly, so it's not great for chugs usually. But when we're stacking loops and there's so much fuzz happening with the bass and the guitar is heavily overdriven, it's good to have options of different gain options that kind of cut through or get lost or intentionally, you know, cut down and other options to bring it up. Mm-hmm. So it's that, so a lot of this stuff is just gain and delays. It's a really more simple than it looks, actually.
And to be different, you know what I mean? To have the different layers.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you, do you know, happen to know what the Fortin mod is to the TSA?
I couldn't even begin to tell you.
Okay.
I've tried all, everything out there I was tried by the companies. Fortin makes great pedals. I've tried the TS9 one they've done too, and that sounds awesome to my ears for what I'm doing. The 808 mod, or the mod of the 808 by Fortin, sounds great.
Okay. I was going to ask, since we kind of went through it, could you show us quickly the different, with some plain examples of the different sounds?
Yeah, so...
the gain structures?
Sure. So Conduit's a song of ours, really heavy, and that starts off with an aggressive HM2 style, and that will get, during the tremolo picking part, you need something a little cleaner.
Yeah.
And this is all going to sound like a wall of fuzz no matter what I do here. But believe it or not, I hear a little bit of differences. But it's this will go from HM2 to like a cleaner,
got it,
still distorted sound. Cool. It's we're talking micro differences, but when the PA is loud, you start to hear a difference. And
yeah,
I'm mixing fuzz. The Maxon 808 blends well with fuzz, whereas HM2 is already a fuzz pedal. So
yeah,
it just gives me options to manipulate the tone throughout the set.
Can we hear the octave up fuzz?
Yeah, and that's fun with the wah pedal too.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the Fox Rocks there.
So here's but with a little gain. The high end fuzz makes it more articulate.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of it becomes the jelly in the peanut butter jelly sandwich.
Exactly. I just showed you like a non peanut butter jelly. I showed you like a sub, a wah sub instead. But the fuzz always goes well with wah.
Yeah.
You know, so
now what's the fuzz 90 or the fuzz 90? The phase 90.
Phase 90, like
it's kind of in its own favorite, little island.
It deserves its own like perfect flight case. It's the best pedal in the world. What is this? The phase 95.
Okay. But it doesn't have a home.
It's a drift. Like drift. Next time I talk to you poor guys, I'll have 8 more pedal boards and like still not big enough. There'll be something spilling over, you know?
Yeah.
So that doesn't have a home. It's there's no room for it, but it's probably my favorite pedal.
Really?
It's everyone should use phase all the time. Like not all the time, but like, it's great for movement, you know, like a low speed. That really gives you a little slow undulation that kind of pushes the tone. that's only like fun pedal, let's say, I have on there is a phase pedal. The rest are
I mean, these are all pretty fun to me.
Maybe they are, I guess. I'm spoiled. But I love the phase. Like, I have to be told, like, stop using it.
Do you live at that speed at all times, or do you go down and move it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, like, love it, slow phase. And there's other cool phase that, like, Maleko makes a phase pedal that Brian and I are obsessed with, and the phase is so slow and so gradual, but it's so rewarding to, like, just sit through a full cycle of it. But yeah, I love phase, and, like, the slower the phase, the better.
And then, so on this, like, satellite or mini board, well, you got a mini wah, and then we already covered that.
It's like mandatory minis over
here.
Another MXR, what is this, the Crybaby wah that they do with Dunlop. There was a Clyde McCoy wah that I loved they did. If I could afford a bigger pedal board over there, I'd use a Clyde McCoy wah.
Okay.
There's something about that yada yada components, and it sounds great. But this one works well, but, like, if I were recording tomorrow, I'd get the Clyde McCoy wah out, because it's a different sound, not that's good or bad. Mm-hmm. But all the wahs I've tried from Dunlop are awesome, but this one, the small mini one, works great for sure.
What's with the Shure packed on? Is that for, like, in-ear monitors or your wireless?
Yeah, I use in-ear monitors, and always it's a direct line, so I'll plug in to this. It's like a little loom I've made with my cable.
Okay.
So that is just, an entry point for, or I plug in to the ears pack.
Okay. How long have you guys been on ears?
Maybe last year in Europe, Dave was always, our drummer was like, hey, you should try ears, you're going to love it. Because there's always a struggle to hear each other on stage, mm-hmm. and, like, different monitors, yada, yada. And I tried it once, a sound check, and I was like, oh, this is great. This is my favorite thing in the world.
Really?
And then the next night, Dave was kind enough to go out and bought me my own ears pack, and I plugged in the next night, and I've never looked back. And after playing at home so much through a DAW, where you're playing through headphones mm-hmm. often, it was no learning curve, I'd
yeah,
say.
Yeah, an extension of that.
It was just like, this is fine. It's better than I hear usually. You know, like, I'm not a fan of wedges, you know, unless you have your own monitor guy. But so ears were a game changer for us, where I could hear everything perfectly. I hear Dave better. I didn't realize Dave was playing whole drum kit every night. I thought he was working away in the hi-hat
the
and the cymbals. Oh, you have a floor tom? I know he loaded in every night. Okay, it sounds great, by the way. It's more fun to play with the band. Like, I hear Brian more. I'm not competing with his frequencies. I can hear the low end of the bass through my ears, and not like, would you turn down, dude? I'm trying to play guitar over here. It's like, no, turn up as loud as you need to be. Do your thing, and I'm happy in my own world.
Yeah.
You know? So I love ears.
Now, I don't know if this is a cat we can let out of the bag, but I'll tee it up. Is there anything on the horizon between you and Dunnable? Like, you could talk about?
Yeah, I'm starting my rival company with him, because we kind of he has a lot of great designs, and I've found some improvements on my work for him. So I found a legal loophole where I can kind of do my own shit.
Yeah.
No, Sasha rules, obviously, and we've been talking about doing a signature guitar together, which is very, exciting to do. So so we're kind of chatting right now about some options and what would be a good idea, what would not be a good idea.
Yeah, what are some of the, if you could allude to or, share some of that information, what are some of the things that are going back and forth? You guys are ping-ponging on ideas and what are possibles? What are some of the things that you're talking about?
I'm taking this opportunity to not be a smartass right now, because I really want to tell you some bullshit. making it like a guitar that people aren't embarrassed to play is a good start,
So, well, I mean, Dunnable, that's a good start right there.
Yeah. So a marriage of, like, what do I like in a guitar and what I prefer that he's done and what would be appealing to other people, I don't have any crazy requirements for a guitar, so it's like, all right, I do have preferences and
what are some
ergonomics of, like, where the knobs are
and
like the scale length again and the pattern of different color options and so I have a lot of preferences, but they're not unheard of, so they're all in his wheelhouse of, like, options he does. So it's been fun going through different color options and talking about what would be cool, and I've played a number of his guitars and I kind of know what suits me best.
So
we're excited to kind of see where it finally ends up, but it's nothing crazy, but I'm excited about where it's headed.
Cool. Well, two quick questions. What is the significance of the sticker or the emblem at the bottom of your bridge?
Oh, sure. this is a Ukrainian trident, and we're here in Ukrainian village in Chicago.
Yeah.
And with our current government and the lack of support maybe towards the war in Ukraine, I'm in full support of Ukraine and their independence. And with our name being Russian Circles, we tour a lot in Europe. I want everyone to know that we support Ukraine. I personally support Ukraine, and my bandmates, I'm sure they do too. But that's my small way of just showing my support for that country in light of our band name being maybe confusing to other people.
Yeah, I bet it is. So. It's a hockey term, folks. Anyone that confuses that, it's a hockey term.
Yeah, absolutely.
Last question, and this is, again, teeing it up. We'll see if it lands. David mentioned swimming. He said that, I don't know, he's like, ask Mike about swimming. David at CME said, I should ask you about swimming.
You should.
Is it like a pastime of yours? Is it where you come up with your best riff ideas?
Swimming, do you not know how to swim? I love swimming. For a while, I was like obsessed with swimming, where I was like...
Do you play guitar underwater? This is, again, Dave.
Here's my PSA. I think people are sleeping on goggles. Goggles underwater make it so beautiful because you get to see the reflection of the water. I can't believe we're talking about this.
This is where we go, baby.
But the reflection of the surface of water is beautiful to see underwater. So if you're going swimming, wear goggles because it makes it more fun. But with him and I had a
thing.
We're swimming a lot. And at the time, I was swimming a ton. And it's just kind of my thing of... unplugging
pools
and swimming
or the lake,
pools.
Ocean.
Definitely softy shit, like in a pool, in a nice pool. A friend had a pool. Her friend Kathy from Sargent House has a pool.
Oh, she's the best.
She rules. I love her for a million reasons, and one of the reasons is
the pool.
is she's like, get up here and hang out. Come hang out. Play guitar up here, and let's hang out. And I'll watch you, or I won't watch you. But she's like, swim in my
You're
pool,
a pool
please.
Boy.
But so we'd have a lot of talks at CME about swimming because of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, who knows? You never know where our rig rundowns go.
Dude, but... I'm not getting any younger. Like, I'm going to need a lot of swimming in my future. So, yeah. But,
well, Mike, I really appreciate you taking the time to make this happen. And it's always good to see you. And I
Likewise.
Can't wait to see Russian Circles again.
Awesome. Sounds good, man.
All right. Guys, take care and keep rocking.